Hi.
Hey, hey.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. We got most of the technology working.
Good. Got to meet Captain Clardy.
Oh, good, good.
I ran upstairs and
they were in there, weren't they?
Yeah.
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 They were being
a little. They were like, we've invaded y'all. So that's okay.
Hang on, just
very impressive.
Yes, absolutely. Oh, it was a crowd in here. I was like, wow, it was crazy. Mr. Reynolds, would you try your microphone and see if it's working? Perfect. Okay. Well, for whatever reason, the microphone out here is not working.
Let's go ahead and get started since Ms. King has arrived.
I was on time. I was 2 minutes early.
Oh wait, it's not even 6. I can't go yet.
1 minute. I'll count you down like they do on TV. No,
I'm just kidding. No, so you can retract the comment.
She was here on time.
That's right. It's right upstairs, one of them. City on vacation.
She is. Yeah, she's in Disney. She's in
Remember
Disney.
Which week?
Who's in Disney?
Cindy.
Oh, is she?
Yeah.
I wondered why we got 2 weeks worth of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's coming up? That's not going to be good.
I hope she's going to Star Wars experience. It's pretty amazing. If you're a Star Wars fan.
Yeah.
You can come watch the movie.
That's right, Friday night. Friday Night Flicks at the Cultural Center will be showing Star Wars Empire Strikes Back as our first movie. That night. Starts at 7:30? Yeah, something like that.
That's that green space in behind the Cultural Center, Michael?
There's been lighting over there, so I don't know.
which is perfect for movie watching.
All right, let's go ahead and get this call to order. The time is 6:01. We are now late. First meeting tonight is going to be Finance and Policy Committee meeting. Date is October 2nd. Time is 6:01. Members present, myself, Michael Reynolds, Ms. Carol King, and Ms. Diane Kuznar, as well as audience members, Mr. Mark Putnam, Mr. Seth Duncan, our city administrator, and Ms. Holly Abercrombie, our finance director. Pretty light meeting tonight, but first order is call to order. Second is public comment. Hearing and seeing none online.
No, sir. Just us. Yes, sir.
Just us?
Just us, yes, sir.
Next time is going to be reading and approval of amendments. What do I have for the Finance Committee meetings minutes dated September 5th, 2023?
Motion to approve as submitted.
Thank you, Ms. King. I have a motion to approve as submitted. Do I have a second?
Second.
I have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Very good. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Carries unanimous. Next item is going to be reports and communication from the city officers. Mr. Duncan, you are up first.
Thanks, sir. Good evening, committee members, chairman.
That's a lot of beeping.
Sorry, I was distracted there for a second. So just a couple things to note tonight. Wanted to let the committee know and that we actually, Ms. Holly Abercrombie and I had a great conversation today with Ms. Anita Holcomb of the Accommodations Tax Advisory program manager at the state. And so we had a great conversation about our reporting. They did send us for the first time a notice that we do need to complete a state accommodations tax report this year. We had a great conversation on how that takes place, what we need to report, how we do it. But they also did advise us that the elements that we talked about earlier this year with regards to setting up our ATAX advisory board is something that we will need to have in place by November 2024. And there is a requirement that the monies that we receive that fall into a certain bucket, we do have to do a grant program for that. So everything we were anticipating, they just gave us a timeline on when we got to do that. So we will be working over the next few months, Ms. Holly and myself, and probably some other staff members, getting things set up and bringing back that program to council and do a full overview of what is required, what we'll need to do, and then also how we will have to use those funds going forward. So that's an exciting thing for us. It's something new, and so we're excited about that. The other thing is, one of the items that we were thinking and hoping to have on the agenda tonight is not on the agenda, so I wanted to explain that real quick. It was the FLSA. So we are about 95% done. However, there was a few elements that I still had questions on, and we're working out at the staff level before we wanted to bring it to the committee, having all of our I's dotted and the T's crossed. The grand scheme of things is not going to change the total figure that we were looking at with regards to the workers, not workers' comp, excuse me,
Comp time,
thank you. Yeah, it's been a long day. The comp time amount, so we don't feel like we're going to lose any ground on that, but we wanted to make sure we had a complete product before we brought it to committee. So, and that's my report.
Thank you, Mr. Duncan, for taking the initiative to make sure you're bringing us something that isn't up in the air and leaving us to discuss it back before. So bring us something and let us do minor discussion, not major. Okay, next item is going to be Ms. Holly Abercrombie, our finance director.
Good evening, members of committee. The audit kicked off today, so I've been up there pulling stuff for them. They're already asking for tons of stuff, so we're in the process of that. And as for this year, so far things look about where they should be for this time of year. Revenue's light, expenses, you know, where they are. So if you have any specific questions, I'd be glad to answer them. Other than that, we'll just chug it on.
How long will you anticipate auditors being on site?
They're actually not on site. They're doing it remote.
Okay.
Did it last year remote. Didn't have any problems. Of course, you know, Bill, Michael Slatnick, the head guy on the job, he'll probably come up later when they're about to close up and want to speak with Seth and myself. So far, they're gonna try to do everything remote.
Very good. Any questions for Ms. Abercrombie? None from committee. Thank you, Ms.
Thank you.
All right, last up to Mr. Mark Putnam, our HR director.
Chairman, Council, good evening. Just want to let you know that as far as the evaluation process for the employees in Malden, we're about 75% done with that. We're waiting on about 25% of the evals that will be given to the employees personally. We'll be finished with that Friday, and then the employees will see their increases on the next check, which if I'm not mistaken is the 13th of October, so they'll see that. That process went very smoothly. I do want to give a pat on the back to the fire department. They did their sort of as a team effort with their battalion chiefs, and I really believe that by doing that and everybody looking at employees from all the way around, they had the fairest and the most accurate evaluations of any department done. So I just want to say good, fine job to them and give them a pat on the back for that. Also, open enrollment will be the November 6th, 7th, and 8th. An email will go out to all employees tomorrow that will explain the 3% increase, what the new rates will be for the increase, and start talking to them about the open enrollment process. And then we'll have that out of the way, and I'm really excited about that because we will be done way before Thanksgiving, which is something we've been shooting for the last 6 years, and we finally got it. So hopefully we're honing that process in. So. Thank you.
That's great, Mr. Putnam. Any questions for Mr. Putnam? Get off easy again. Okay. Next up is going to be unfinished business, which we have none. Our next item is going to be new business. This is an FOIA policy. This came from Mr. Duncan's suggestion to look at the amount that we spend on FOI requests and having those reviewed by the city attorney. So, Mr. Duncan, do you want to take that off?
Yes, sir. So, we teed this up last month, but we wanted to bring the finished product to you, to the committee. So, essentially what it is right now our current FOIA policy requires that every FOIA that comes through the clerk's office to, once it's been compiled, to be sent to and redacted the information that cannot be released. It's then sent to the city attorney's office, who then reviews it and then sends it back to the clerk, who then sends it out. And consultation with the city attorney's office, they felt that that was an extra step that wasn't necessary. The municipal clerk has a great authority to know when to redact, when not to redact, what information, when she has questions about, she speaks to the attorney. So what we were looking to do is in the policy is just make a red line change to where now under item, where are we? We are in under 3 procedure, item A, number 4, item F, okay, which is page 9. Doing a red line change to state that the city clerk's office will compile the information, review the records for any exceptions, make any redactions necessary to the records, or request the department make the redactions, consult legal counsel if necessary, and may provide the specific section of the FOIA statute for inclusion in the response to the requester. And with that change, that'll give the clerk the flexibility to still rely upon legal counsel if necessary. However, it takes out the mandated review, which will save the city about $6,000. We noted $7,000 is what we spent last year. We do know that we will have from time to time things that we want to run by legal just to make sure we're if it's something unusual, something different than what we normally see. But so we still maintain that flexibility, but we will bring down some of those costs. So that's the goal of it, and for clarity's sake.
Well, I think for clarity's sake, I'm thinking of unusual items should be pretty obvious whether or not legal needs to be involved. Normal and customary traffic tickets or whatever.
Yeah. You got it. Yeah, I would say 90% of our FOIA requests fall into either action reports or it's sometimes any open permits or violation notices against like homes or properties. When someone's doing their due diligence period. But that's probably about 90% of what we do, and she's very familiar with what she has to redact and things like that. And on the weird ones are the things where when you get a request for like personnel records, there may be some questions and she'll run it by legal. And she does that now. So it's really changing this to kind of this practice she's already participating in. However, she is sending all of them at this time for legal review.
All right, committee.
Mr. Chair, I'll make a motion to forward to full council the resolution to establish a policy for processing requests for public records pursuant to the Freedom of Information Act.
Very good. Thank you, Ms. King. I have a motion, and I'm going to repeat all that. We'll leave that to Ms. Miller. To send to full council with a recommendation of approval as well.
Second.
Thank you. Any other discussion on this item? Yes.
Okay. So my question is, I know that we are allowed to charge.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. That's correct.
And just in my paralegal background, several cities charge like $5 for the police reports.
Yes, ma'am.
Because of the accidents and whatever. Is that something that we charge? Because when you think about someone's time to redact and then plus the mailing of a postage.
Yes, ma'am. It is something that we do charge. We do assess a fee for that. There's, I believe it's in our fee schedule. The difference, though, is that, yes, by the FOIA law, we can charge for the time and the materials used of the lowest highest paid person who can perform those tasks. However, a legal review is not something that we can charge an additional to. So it might be a $5 charge for the report, but then we're being billed $175 an hour for a legal review. So, although it's not taking an hour. So that's where the cost is fair. We can't recoup that cost though, unfortunately.
Right. Yeah. Well, and that's what I'm totally in agreement with doing it this way. I just wanted to make sure that we are at least charging something for
those, yes,
because in this fee schedule it wasn't clear as to specifics, I guess.
Yes, ma'am. Please.
Okay. Any other questions?
No, that's all I have. Thank you.
And Mr. Chairman, just to reiterate, for accident incident reports, it's $3 per report, and FOIA requests are also at 25 cents per page and employee time.
Yeah. All right, thank you.
No problem.
Unless it's less than $20.
Right.
All right, I have a motion and a second to send this to full council with recommendation of approval. I'm going to move this forward for a vote. All those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. It carries unanimous, 3-0, to move forward to full council at the next meeting. Okay. Moving on, next item is going to be public comment. Seeing and hearing none online. Move on, committee concerns for the Finance and Policy Committee meeting. Any questions, comments, or concerns from committee members? Hearing and seeing none. Do I have adjournment?
I'll make a motion to adjourn.
Second.
Motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Committee meeting stands adjourned. Your next committee meeting is going to be Building Codes Committee.
He has not, but I will double check in just a moment, ma'am. Yeah, he also, I believe his meeting started at 6 o'clock, too, where he was headed. So, screen share. Okay.
All right, it is 6:15 on October the 2nd, and this is the Building Codes Committee. Everyone is present except Taft Matney, who had a prior engagement. We have the Building Codes Director, Tegatiro, and Building Codes, sorry. Yeah, Seth Duncan, our administrator, with us tonight. So, first up is public comment. Did we have this? Public comment, come on up, please. And there's a microphone up there that you'll need to speak in, please. You'll need to state your name and address, please.
My name is Myra McCrum. I live in 693 Lockshoals Road.
Hi, Sandra Bond, 701 Lockshoals Road.
We understand that they are building some condos behind the lot for Mr. Horn. It's owned by Mr. Horn. Is that correct?
They are asking for annexation and rezoning for this property or these three properties where they're wanting to build 101 townhomes.
So what we wanted to ask, because we're neighbors and when we bought the property, it's nobody behind us, of course, and there's nobody in front of us. So we bought the property. And now that they're building there, we're not going to say they can't build because that's theirs, but we're asking, can they build homes instead of townhomes? Okay. It's just a concern because of the road. It is already traffic. People are driving so fast in that road. And it's just a concern that it's going to be more congested.
Okay. And also, there's already three subdivisions right across from us and one right in behind us within the last couple of years. So it seems excessive.
Okay. Anything else?
I don't think so. I mean, I don't know how to do this. I don't know what my input is, but I just wanted to say that I'm in my 70s, and I put all the money I have earned into my home, and I think it's made the road look really nice, and so has Myra's. I think it looks good. It's a pretty place. And when we first moved there, behind us was nothing but trees, and they have bulldozed all the trees, and there's a subdivision behind me now. And I, like her, I understand growth, but when's the end? When do we stop? That's all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Anyone online?
No, ma'am.
Thank you. Thank you for speaking.
Thank you for listening.
You're welcome. Okay, so Mr. Dearhoff.
Do you want to do minutes first?
Yeah. Oh, I'm so sorry. it's the hand, sorry. Okay, so what do I hear on reading and approval of minutes from September the 5th?
Motion to approve as submitted.
All right. Any changes? I'll second it, and all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Carries. Okay, so now reports or communications from our city officer.
All right, good evening, committee members. I'm David Dearhoff, Director of Business and Development Services. I just wanted to give you an update on our monthly report that's hot off the press for last month. The momentum of last month's high number of building inspections continued in September. We did 2,272 building inspections. The pass rate for building inspections shot up to above 60%, which is a level we've been hoping to see for a while. We have a new building inspector on board who I think is largely responsible for that, so we are grateful to him. The momentum of last month's high residential permits continued into September. We issued 481 residential permits, and 78 of those were for new homes. A high number of commercial permits were issued in September. We issued 71. These included permits for two new businesses coming to Bridgeway Station, Belladina's and Old Europe Cafe. Our department issued licenses for 18 new businesses, including 9 of which are opening doors inside the city limits of Malden. That's a report I have for you tonight.
Thank you. Any questions?
Just have one. With the increase in building inspections that you're doing, do you see anything new or different when you are doing these building inspections, or is it just run-of-the-mill, just more of them?
That's a lot. I think that when we have had our third party contracted to do building inspections, that's been running a little differently and a little differently than we have liked. So it has been nice for us to get another in-house inspector back on board to try to take the lion's share of that. He obviously can't do all of these himself, so we're still using our third party to supplement. But as far as the nature of the inspectors go, it varies from development to development. We see some projects where they're in a real rush to the point where they're getting in their own way when it comes to building inspections and missing a lot. And other developers, we don't have that same issue. So it's just, it's different from project to project.
Thanks.
All right, next we have unfinished business, which there is none. So we'll move on to new business, which if you would like to introduce.
All right, Madam Chair and committee members. This first item on the agenda is for an annexation and zoning assignment for 14.3 acres at Long Shoals Road. The city's received this petition. It consists of 4 parcels. They include various owners of those 14.3 acres and 4 parcels. The applicants requested these tracts be zoned R10, which is a medium density residential district upon annexation into the city. STYO development intends to develop these tracts for approximately 101 attached attached single-family homes or townhomes on this track. And if you have the site drawing, we'll display that on the computer here or the screen. Stanley Martin will reportedly be the builder for these townhomes. The price point for these homes is projected to average in the mid to high 200,000s. Aside from the 12-acre tract, which is currently undeveloped and wooded, the other three tracts that are part of this petition are occupied by single-family residences. These tracts back up to a new subdivision that you can just kind of see on the left of the screen there called Greenbrier Meadows. It's currently being developed in Greenville County. They consist of 65 detached single-family homes on approximately 62 acres. That project was approved by Greenville County in 2017, and the final plat for that was recorded, and construction began in 2022. And Stanley Martin Homes is the builder, home builder for that community. I'll give you a little overview of the proposed development that we're reviewing the annexation petitions for tonight. As I mentioned, this is a proposal that consists of about 101 townhomes. Their conceptual design includes the following. The townhomes will be approximately 1,500 square feet with three bedrooms, two bathrooms, and a single car garage. The exterior building finished materials will consist of vinyl with stone water tables. Some units may have full stone on the first floor. The primary subdivision entrance will be on Log Shoals Road, and will line up directly across from the primary subdivision entrance for the Alston Chase community, which is right across the street. They will also tie into a stub street, Laurelton Place, and the Greenbrier Meadows subdivision behind it. Amenities may include a dog park, open-air pavilion, and fire pit area. A 20-foot landscape buffer is being provided in this conceptual drawing adjacent to the existing residences who we heard from a couple tonight. They're also providing a 50-foot landscape buffer along the southern connector, Interstate Highway 185. A stormwater management detention area will be located at the back of the property adjacent to the southern connector. You can kind of see it as that little blue bubble on the bottom of the screen. And sewer will incorporate a lift station that will pump the sewer across Log Shoals Road and tie into the gravity sewer at Alston Chase. Blue Water Civil right now is working on designing that sewer system. Metro Connects is the sewer provider for this general area, including Alston Chase. And Blue Water Civil is currently working on obtaining preliminary approval from Metro Connects. It's not yet known if Metro will approve that, but we're waiting on that. This tract is currently located in the Malden Fire Service. That will not change. Our fire protection services will continue to apply. I'll share with you a few findings from staff. This property is designated for low-density residential in the future land use map of the comprehensive plan. And the comprehensive plan low-density residential areas are envisioned to consist of single-family homes, typically on lots of quarter acre or larger. The density of the proposed development of these tracts is planned at roughly 7.1 units per acre. In comparison to other nearby new communities, including Alston Chase, which is 3.4 units per acre, Greenbrier Meadows, which is 1.3 units per acre, Sholey Ridge, which is 3.3 units per acre, and cottages at Sholey Ridge, which is 3.5 units per acre. The density of this project will be considerably higher than the general character of development in the surrounding area, as well as higher than what was envisioned in the comprehensive plan. There are no apparent floodplains, wetlands, or topographic constraints on the site. The property appears to slope towards the southern connector, which is where the stormwater detention facility is proposed. According to Greenville County GIS, the elevation of the site falls by about 34 feet over a distance of about 1,200 feet, so that's a grade of just under 3%. As I noted previously, the density of the tracks, or the density of this proposed development is higher than what's typical or found in the development of the surrounding area. And additionally, townhomes are not a common land use in the surrounding area. The only other townhomes in this area are in the Baldwin Chase subdivision at Baldwin Road. And that project actually consists of a mix of townhomes and detached homes. It has 60 townhomes and 87 detached homes. I noted earlier that the projected price point for this project, for these homes, will be in the mid to high 200s, 200,000s. These price points do appear to be lower than the average value of homes in the surrounding communities. And I gave you a chart that shows the average sales in Elston Chase, Greenbrier Meadows, Sholey Ridge, and cottages at Sholey Ridge, which all are in the threes and fours. And lastly, I'll just again reiterate on Metro Connects. We don't know if they'll, I say this, we don't know that they'll approve the sewer design because we've had some issues with them in the past and current of them dragging their feet on, or being resistant, I should say, to approving projects that have pump stations. We know they have a policy for pump stations, but we have not seen them yet approve ones around here, around our community, I should say. So if that part of it too will be interesting, at least for staff to watch and see how that plays out. It's been a real problem, as you may recall, for the project on Ranch Road, where they have been reliant on having to incorporate a pump station, but Metro Connects has not been willing to approve that design. In terms of traffic, the prospective development is projected to generate about 46 to 57 vehicle trips during peak hours, and that's using the Institute of Transportation Engineers trip generation rates. The there is a representative from Blue Water Civil here tonight, so if you have any questions for the applicant, Ms. Christie is available to answer those for you. That's the report I have for you on this item tonight.
Thank you. Any questions?
Yeah, I have a few. I'm going to start.
Sure.
Okay. So you mentioned Metro Kinetics and the sewer pump. So we don't know whether the sewer pump would be, they would, one, build one, two, but we would build it and then sell it to them. Like, how does that typically work?
Normally the way that works is the developer, working with their engineer, will come up with a design for the sewer pumps that would need to meet the standards for that sewer provider, in this case Metro, unless Metro declines to serve. And then at that point they would probably turn to us to see if we would accept their design and their sewer. But so they come up with the design, they the developer, build it, install it, and then after it's installed and put into operation, then it becomes taken over by Metro if Metro elects to maintain their level as a sewer provider for this project.
Okay. All of the four tracks are currently zoned RS in the county. So describe for us what RS is in the county and how it differs, if at all, to R10 in the city.
RS is it's called a residential suburban zoning district in the county. It's their lowest density residential district. In fact, the Greenbrier Meadows project behind it is developed with the RS zoning. So you can kind of get an idea by seeing those lot layouts, what type of size lots you're typically looking at, but the closest equivalent we have in our zoning ordinance is R20, which again gets into kind of quarter acre size lots.
And across the road where we have Kelbell Drive, Lanyard Lane, Boring Way, that subdivision, is that within the city or the county?
That one's in the city. And let me give you a little background on this one. It is R10, which is the same zoning we're talking about here tonight. But some of you who were around this project when they first approached the city about being annexed may have recalled that it was initially presented as a townhome project, and there was, I think, a little pushback on that. And so they pivoted, the developer, pivoted and instead looked at doing a detached single-family home project, which is what you have there now. And I reported on what their density is just a moment ago. Pull it right back up here. Theirs is at 3.4 units per acre. And what they were able to accomplish in that project was preserving a sizable amount of open space that the community could use for trails, and they have a playground in the wooded area and such, which helped bring the overall density of the project down.
The property that we're discussing this evening, there hasn't been any kind of public comment at this point because they're trying to get it annexed with us, right?
Right. You may recall from our city attorney that he's noted that the annexation process is not one that the state requires to be publicly advertised with signs on the property and that sort. It does not go to the Planning Commission like a rezoning does. It comes straight to y'all. There are a few residents there, though, that we've let know about it, so you've heard from some of them tonight. But typically, there's not a public hearing process for this like there is in a rezoning. What would happen for this is if it was annexed and zoned by the city and they want to move forward with this project, then they would go through the subdivision process. That does involve a public hearing, but sometimes it's a little hard for the Planning Commission to say no to a project at that point once it's been annexed and zoned. So that's just how it is.
And you wouldn't happen to know on either side of this development, the one that's in the county and the one that's in the city, how they have orchestrated their sewer systems and runoff and stormwater management?
So I do know for the Alston Chase project that their sewer system is all gravity, goes towards the connector, and actually think comes in somewhere around the other side of the connector between Baldwin Chase and Highland Chase, ties into a trunk line there. Stormwater is the same way. Their stormwater for Alston Chase is over on the other end that's off the screen here. Again, that's the way the topography flows, so it's kind of up against where the southern connector is on the east end.
And both of those are currently served by Metro?
I know Alston Chase is. I'm sure Greenbrier Meadows is. Chris can answer that one. She's more familiar with it.
Good evening. I'm Chrissy Drake with Blue Water Civil Design. We actually designed Alston Chase, so I know a good bit about that one. He's correct that with the sewer, it comes down over across that center connector and has a main trunk line between Baldwin Chase and Highland Chase, and there actually was an upgrade to that sewer main that was associated with Alston Chase. What we've noticed with that main is anything coming to it is going to have an upgrade, according to Metro. So including this site that we're proposing now with having that pump station, having it tied to Alston Chase, we're anticipating there's going to be some upgrades to that sewer line down all along that main. We're not sure until Metro gets us back that approved PSR, and it'll state how much linear foot and at what size we have to upgrade the line to. As for Greenbrier, with that being in the county, that's remained that far S because there is no gravity sewer for that site. Those are all septic lots.
Oh.
So that's the difference. They actually at one point tried to rezone and have a little bit higher density. They wanted a townhome component. They wanted more of a single family layout like what's shown in Alston Chase, but were unable to get sewer in that area. So that is why those are such large lots, because you have to be able to have room for their septic systems. So they're viewing, it's the same builder, and they're viewing what we're proposing as an extension to that neighborhood. They've done some market research in the area and have seen there's a need for that price point for mold in this area and for townhomes. As he said, it's not common to see them in this area, so it does provide a different value to the market in having a little bit lower priced homes around that area for people to be able to get into the home market.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things that when I was going through this, probably the biggest thing was sticker shock in the other direction. I haven't seen anything cross our desk under 300 in a while.
Right.
And I think that's a good thing because affordability is a major issue. But those are the main questions that I wanted to ask. I'll turn it back over to you.
Thank you. I have no questions for you.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. All right. Well, I think I am going to make a motion to deny the annexation for zoning of R10 on this.
I'll second it so we can discuss.
Okay. All right. So we have a motion and a second discussion.
Okay.
I'll start. I just don't feel like this townhome project fits with what's going on around it. Usually, there's going to be 101 townhomes projected in this area. And I just don't think that it is going to be a good fit in that location.
I'm going to show my inexperienced card and ask Mr. Duncan, by me seconding that, did I just agree to it?
No, you did not, sir. Just the person who makes the motion has to vote in affirmative for the motion that they made, because they're the one who brought it up. So, but no, anyone who seconds is free to vote either way.
Great, thank you.
Yes, sir.
My take on it is, if I were to look at the project and say the things that I like about it and what I don't like about it, I would much rather see a 50-foot buffer around the other areas, not so much the Southern Connector. Let those neighbors wave to the Southern Connector by pulling them a little bit closer. We talked about some of the concerns, right, about the properties adjacent, but I do like the fact that this is looking at a different price point. So for that, I can appreciate that. I would much rather hold it in committee. We know that Mr. Matney's not here. He might want to weigh in. We had also two neighbors here who also spoke up, which I always appreciate. And that might give, based on our conversation with the developer, some additional thoughts on what they might want to come back if we held it in committee. But I will end my comments there.
All right, well, all those in favor of denying the annexation for zoning of R10, say aye.
Aye.
And those opposed?
Aye.
Where do we go from here, Mr. Duncan?
The agenda item is still present, and so therefore another motion can be made from the floor.
Okay. All right.
Madam Chair, if it would be okay, I would like to make a motion that we hold this in committee for our November meeting.
I'll second it for the sake of discussion, I guess. It could go all night. I think that because then what we're doing is we're holding it for another month. So rather than holding it in committee, if we just forward it to full council so they can all weigh in, and Mr. Matney can certainly weigh in at that time. That's kind of where I would prefer to go with that.
I mean, I think giving the developer the feedback that we can give them, they may come back with something new and interesting. Maybe not. And by holding it in committee, we can be a little bit more strategic in having those conversations. The one thing that is of note, and just so that we have the public comment as well, as you've heard, this is still RS, so there still can be development on this property. It's a matter of, does it get annexed into our city, or doesn't it? And then ultimately, what residential component does it get annexed in as? So I would still like to keep it in committee, but if you vote no, then we'll see what happens next.
All right. Well, all of those in favor of holding it in committee, say aye.
Aye.
And all those opposed, say no. No. So this is... All right, so then I'm going to make the motion to send it to full council to discuss, and then at that time, if the developers want to come and share, or our neighbors would like to come and, you know, share their views, we can maybe hash it out there. So, any discussion on that?
I'll second the motion. I think it was a motion. Right?
Okay. It was a motion. Yeah.
It was a motion. So I'll second the motion.
Okay.
I have no further discussion. So.
And can I, and maybe Mr. Duncan can weigh in here if I'm not asking an appropriate question, but is this being forward for discussion only, or are you being forward in for potential action?
I suppose that we could forward it for some type of action.
I would make the recommendation that you make the motion for discussion.
Okay. All right then, so discussion.
I'm fine with that. Second? If we're still in the first motion, right?
I understood it to be discussion.
Okay, so. You understood it to be discussion.
That's where I was. I appreciate the clarification, but that's where I was on that. But it does not prevent council from still taking action at the meeting. But I think it's just how it's framed, and so you're not necessarily requiring or requesting specific action. So it's more or less, we'll have it on the agenda. It'll be the third Monday at 7 p.m. right here, for those in the audience paying attention. And it'll be listed as a discussion item versus an action item, but it does not prevent council from taking action.
Okay. Thank you. All right, so we have our discussion, right? You have more?
I don't really have any more other than all this is just to say that I'm not for or against it. It's just a matter of whether we want to have that discussion in committee or have a discussion as a full council. So when you make the call, I will allow it to go to full council.
I thought I made the motion to...
We have a motion. Council. Yes, ma'am. We have a motion on the floor. I think you were just saying for calling for the vote.
Yeah.
House
okay. Okay.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. So... All those in favor of sending it to full council, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All right, the ayes have it, so it will move forward to full council.
It's tough when there's just two.
Okay, so next up is the ordinance amending the business license ordinance.
All right, thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. So, South Carolina's Act 176, the Business License Standardization Act, requires every municipality and county government with a business license tax to update its business licensing rate class schedule every odd number year to go into effect the following year. As such, 2023 is a time to update the city's licensing practices to remain in compliance with state law. As required by Act 176, the class schedule updates are based on the latest statistical data on business profitability from the IRS, which then receives approval from the SC Revenue and Fiscal Affairs Office. Each local government must adopt these updates by December 31st, 2023 to address those licensing renewals that will take place for the license year running from May 1st, 2024 through April 30th, 2025. This amendment entails the following: the NAICS codes for Class 8.3 on telephone companies has been corrected. Class 8.6 for billiard or pool tables has been updated as follows: a business that offers the use of billiard or pool tables shall be subject to business license taxation under its natural class for all gross income of the business, excluding the gross income attributable to the billiard or pool tables. In addition, the billiard or pool tables shall require their own separate business license pursuant to SC Code Section 12-21-2746, and shall be subject to a license tax of $5 per table measuring less than 3.5 feet wide and 7 feet long, and $12.50 per table longer than that. Third, the NAICS codes for Class 9.41 regular peddlers and Class 9.42 season peddlers or seasonal peddlers have been eliminated. Businesses that were previously classified into 9.41 or 9.42 shall be required to apply and pay for a business license in their natural class. And then, lastly, the reg class schedule in Appendix B has been replaced. Some of the business sectors have been reassigned to new reg classes. And I've given you a table of those in the ordinance. There's 7 groups there. In all the of all those reassignments, the industry sectors were reassigned to classes with lower rates. This means that the business license revenue collected by the city from these industry sectors may go down a little bit. But in order to be compliant with South Carolina's Act 176, staff recommends approval of this ordinance being presented tonight.
Thank you. Any questions? All right. Do I hear a motion?
Yes, I will make a motion that we send to full council for approval of the business license standardization ordinance amendments as presented this evening.
All right. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All right. Motion carries. All right. So this will go to full council and back to public comments. Okay. Hearing none, committee concerns. Hearing none, what do I hear an adjournment?
So moved.
Okay. I'll second, we are adjourned at 6:50 p.m. Next up is recreation.
Mr. Matt, he's still not on.
He was not on.
All right. We will call the Recreation Committee meeting to order at 6:51. Mr. Reynolds and myself are present. Mr. Matney could not make it due to another commitment this evening. Also in the house is Mr. Cumlander, our Recreation Director, as well as Seth Duncan, our City Administrator. First up is public comment. Do we have anyone to do public comment? Hearing none and seeing none, we have reading approval of minutes.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a motion we approve the minutes as submitted for September 5th.
I will second that. Any changes, discussion?
No, Mr. Chairman.
All in favor of the readings as the approval of minutes as submitted, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. The ayes have it. We then move on to reports from our officers, and this would be Mr. Cumlander.
Yes, sir, Mr. Chair, committee. I want to talk a little bit about our program. We are finishing up with baseball, softball, football. We've probably got another about a week or two. Sports Center's doing well. Senior Center's doing well. The Senior Center, I want to commend the new coordinator up there. She's really done a good job. She's cleaned up. If you get a chance, just ride by there and just you can just tell it's real neat looking. I was just there a minute ago, and she's done a really good job with cleaning up and throwing some stuff away that had been thrown away for a long time. And she's doing good with the programs, and seniors seem to like her, and that's a challenge in itself, making them happy sometimes. And so they seem really happy with her. And the new staff, we basically got a new staff except Ms. McKinney. But we got Ms. Taylor and Ms. Wendy down there, and they, I just want to commend on how well the job they're doing.
So.
Excellent. Any questions for Mr. Pellander before he gets into preparation and safety?
No, Mr. Chair.
All right. You want to hop into the next one?
I do. So I think Chief may come up here too as well, but we had a situation a couple weeks ago, and if you've been around youth sports, you're going to have this. You're going to have parents. I think me and Michael have shared stories about some of the parents, and I was looking at our numbers, so we got close to 800, close to 900 with cheerleading. And so you're going to have one or two that's going to make it difficult. And make it challenging for us as staff to make sure everybody behaves like they should. You would hope that adults would do that, but sometimes they get passionate about the sports. Football is a very passionate sport. It's an intense sport. I played it. I've been around it over 40 years. My brother played it, and people tend to show too much passion. And with that said, we're going to take some precautions with the department. We're going to do a couple things. We have it's National Football High School Association, and basically that's who we do our concussion protocol through. We make our coaches do that. There's some other things that they can do as well. It's fundamental with coaching. The other one is positive parent with the program. Each parent is going to take that class and watch the video and shoot us an email. Hopefully they will do it. I can't mandate, I can't mandatory do it, but we have that tool out there for them to do that. It will be mandatory for coaches to take that course along with the concussion protocol as well, mainly for football. The police have been out there, and I think that's a good thing. I think it's a good thing for the police department. I think it's a community relations type thing for the police department. And people just want to feel safe. When a child gets hurt out on the football field, having an officer out there could get that first responder out there quicker. You know, if you're out at Sunset Park, if you didn't know, if you call 911, it goes to the county. It doesn't go to City Malden, to the City Hall dispatcher. It goes to the county. So I look at it as a positive thing. A lot of people said, Bart, why is the police department out here? I said, well, it's for everybody's safety. We have that many people, that many sports. We're running four sports. We're going to have some issues. We try to do a good job of picking coaches, but sometimes they disappoint you. They might be the nicest person you want to meet, and when they get out there, they get compassionate about the sport, and they don't know how to control their behavior. And that's what happened with this situation. We did have a staff member down there. He did all he could do to defuse the situation, but eventually the police did have to come and handle the situation. I don't think the police department too, because I know that's outside their wheelhouse sometimes, has had to deal with that. But again, Malden High School has for their football games, every sporting event, I think pretty much the chief would tell you that you have an officer there. And Springfield's a unique part. You're playing sports down there. I call a game Thursday night down there, last Thursday night. And you're on top of one another. Parents on top of another. And as a referee, you can't have rabbit ears either. You've got to be able to take a little bit of heat. Because if you go and react to every little thing somebody says something to, and then, you probably don't need to be called. Because, even grandparents get upset. You got a wide range of folks coming to those games. You've got grandparents, you got parents, you got aunts and uncles. And the younger they are, the more people you have. The older they tend to get, they don't come to events like they used to. And so we're dealing with multiple parents. You got grandparents raising kids now, so we're dealing with that. And so I want to come out of rec staff as well because, yes, we're out there and we try to defuse the situation. We don't want to call the police. I don't want to tell a coach he can't call. I don't tell a referee he can't call. But if they act up and don't listen to what we say and have rules, then they will not be coaching for us. Because they're representing this town, and they're representing me and that department, and mainly they're representing this town. And we're not going to tolerate that. So we are on it. I ain't going to say it's going to happen, not going to happen again. People are going to be people, and people are going to get upset. But we're going to do our best to try to defuse the situation and doing a better job of picking our coaches. And maybe go on 70 miles, but that's what we're doing as our department.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Cohen?
Thank you, Mr. Allgood. Certainly appreciate, you know, how passionate I am about youth sports and the importance it is to a community and the importance it is to youth. Sometimes there's the coaches that are the ones doing the growing up on the football field or baseball field or whatever it may be. But a couple of comments. First, do our parents, when they sign up for any sports or they sign any sort of an agreement, you know, tolerance or zero tolerance policy for anything like that?
They do. They have it's our code of conduct. A code of conduct. Person. They sign when they sign up. Yes.
I thought I remember doing that when I signed up for maybe when we signed up for basketball. But,
yes, sir.
Perfect. Okay. And I think the other comment that you and I have talked about is, you know, I think it was Mike Matheny who said in his one of his funny speeches about, you know, the way he would coach youth sports as if it was a team full of orphans because parents are the ones that do a great job of brewing it. So having been around baseball for a long, long time and enjoying that being a family sport that we enjoy, I certainly know what you mean. So certainly appreciate you taking efforts and what your staff does to try to provide safety. And I would encourage you that we have police involvement in a way that is, to your point, a community service, not necessarily there for security as much as it is as presence. So I think that would be my main comments. Are you looking to adopt a policy for this, or just trying to do an update of, hey, we've had these incidents and here's what we're doing to address them moving forward?
We're going to try to adopt some of those things, and I'll share these links with Seth, and he can sure pass them on to you. That's what we're trying to do. I don't want to, another thing too, is I don't want the police department out there to scare people away either. You know what I'm saying? So, and I say this, and this includes the fire department. I have a 10 and 14-year-old kid. I think a kid in this day and time, some of the bad press maybe the police would get, and I'm talking as a parent now, I think sometimes they get a bad rap or bad press because one or two police officers. And I think youth need to see police officers and firefighters, not only if they have called 911 or whatever else, to see them in a good sense as well. So them coming to the house if something was wrong. And I think that breaks the ice a little bit when a kid sees a police officer, they're seeing the good part of the officers. And I have to say, these officers that came down there and passed out stickers. That's what it's all about. So that's answering your question, sir.
And Mr. Reynolds, I just wanted to add to that. No, we're not essentially changing the policy, but we do want to have the added element of security and community and development or engagement. And so, you know, from a couple of weeks ago up and through the rest of the fiscal year, we are going to have officers present at football games, at baseball games, basketball games, and Bart was the fourth one. Flag football?
Yes, sure.
Yeah, flag football. So we've got a plan for that, and we can handle that administratively and internally. We do have the funding to do that, although we may make some line item adjustments later on in the year just to make sure we don't, because we're pulling it from overtime. And then next year we'll allocate additional resources into the budget initially to allocate for these additional service opportunities.
Thank you, Mr. And I'd follow up again with encouraging the police, to Mr. Gumlander's point, is to use this as an opportunity for community engagement, not necessarily security. And certainly we encourage police to again use it for that purpose as much as security. But appreciate your staff being a part of it and handling it. I don't know the specifics of this particular incident, but I know I've been at a baseball game where the police were called. So.
Well, yeah, yes, sir. Andre's a big fella, but I don't want Andre being the bouncer. I mean, Andre told me to calm down. I'm probably going to calm down and sit down. So, but
in the spirit of self-preservation,
yes.
Well, no, again, I know that's it's important to the community, and what you do is important. So just however staff, however council can help you and encourage you in a way that continues to get our fields used and get
youth out there playing rather than being stuck on their tablets. Just keep them informed and let us know.
Thank you.
The only thing that I will add, you mentioned like reputation of the police, right? I remember when I first came on council and I sat down with Chief Miller and he was talking about the way that he wanted to run this police department. And part of that is changing the culture, changing the understanding of what we're here to do. And a lot of that is, a lot of times you think it's common sense stuff, right? We're one big community, we should all love one another, but sometimes it's hard to do. But it's what I know that Chief Miller is doing, and tomorrow night, I think you have, is it tomorrow night though?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Yeah.
National Night Out.
National Night Out, so we have that event. And so I think that's where everything that you mentioned tonight, I think are great things to move in the right direction about holding those coaches accountable. They're volunteers. But holding them accountable because they ultimately represent our city when they're out there. And putting into practice really coaching coaches and coaching parents. And the more that we have those conversations and develop a culture of sportsmanship and what we're really out there to do, I think as we use the police force diffusing the situation, I think that helps diffuse the situation when we have these conversations and we have that culture. So I appreciate everything that you said, and again, if someone doesn't get it, they don't need to be umpiring and they do not need to be coaching our kids. So I appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. Anything else for Mr. Commander?
No, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
There is no unfinished business, so that leads us into new business and the naming of the pedestrian bridge. Is that going to be you, Mr. Duncan? Or
no, Mr. it's going to be Ms. Lauren Carter tonight.
All right.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members. Just to provide some background on this, so this was based on a process that was approved by the Recreation Committee on August 7th. And the City of Malden sought public input on the name for the pedestrian bridge over 385 through a press release, social media post, and website post. The city received a total of 2,111 submissions by the deadline of September 5th at noon. 1,505 of those submissions came from the online form, 495 came from social media, and 111 came by email. And after taking out the duplicate names and names that were discriminatory, profane, vulgar, derogatory, or sexual in nature, there were a total of 1,284 names to consider. It's a small amount. So a selection committee comprised of 7 members met to discuss the submissions and recommend 3 to 5 names to the recreation committee. And that selection committee included city administrator Seth Duncan, myself, recreation director Mark Homelander, community development director J.R. Charles, residential permit facilitator Will Hopkins, police corporal Harley Subcheck, and Phil Hughes, president of Hughes Investments. And so in the process of considering these 1,284 names, we developed a set of criteria to sort of guide us through the process. And that criteria included, we felt that the name should be unique in that it should not repeat other landmarks or bridge names, especially well-known ones such as the Golden Gate Bridge or names that are already heavily utilized in the city. We also felt that it should be connected to Malden. We felt that, especially with Bridgeway Station's physical address being technically in Simpsonville, or its mailing address being in Simpsonville, we felt that it was very important that the bridge should have a clear connection to Malden. And although the bridge will most likely, when it's mentioned in casual conversation, it'll be shortened, the name of the bridge will be shortened, when appearing in print, we felt it was important that Malden be recognized and remembered. Another criteria we felt was important was it being descriptive, in that in some way it should describe the bridge or the purpose it serves. We also wanted it to be memorable and catchy. We felt it was important that it should be easy to pronounce, that people wouldn't be confused about how to say it, and that it should have a sort of ring to it. And we also kept in mind that long names are most likely going to be shortened and given a nickname. For example, the Bon Secours Wellness Arena being known as the Well. We also felt that the name of the bridge should be inclusive and community focused, because we really felt that the bridge represents community and connection. And so we felt that the name should be inclusive and reflective of the entire community and should not have the potential to alienate certain members of the community. We also felt it should be non-controversial. We wanted the name to have a positive connotation and wanted to stay away from anything or anyone that could be linked to any sort of controversy. And lastly, we wanted the name to be forward-looking because we felt that because the bridge links to the new Bridgeway Station development and it's eventually going to connect to the Swamp Rabbit Trail, we feel that it represents a new chapter of Malden's history, and so we kind of wanted the name to speak to Malden's potential or its growth. And so we came up with a total of 5 names that we're recommending to you. These are in no particular order. For each name, we've also provided some possible alternatives or similar names that you could go with. And we also listed committee feedback for each name because we felt that each name had strengths and weaknesses, and we wanted to kind of give you our thought process and what we were thinking were the pros and cons of each name. We did review all the names for possible trademark infringement using the trademark electronic search system at uspto.gov, and I did not find any records for any of the names that were recommended. Okay, so the first name is Malden Skyway Bridge. And we came up with some possible variations or alternatives, and those include Malden Skyway, Malden Skyway Arch, Malden Skywalk, Malden Sky Bridge, and Malden Skyview Bridge. The next recommendation is Malden Archway, and this could potentially be stylized with the W capitalized like it is in Bridgeway, to kind of coincide with that. The next recommendation is Malden Highway Overpass, AKA the Malden HOP. And HOP could also stand for Historic Overpass Project. The next recommendation is Malden Gateway Bridge. And some alternatives could be Malden Gateway or Malden Gateway Arch. And then the final recommendation is Malden's Tall Metal Pathway. And the alternative could be Malden's Palmetto Promenade. And we, as I mentioned, we do have some selection committee feedback mentioned for each name, so I'm happy to go through that if you'd like, but if not, I can turn it over to you.
Thank you. Thank you for describing kind of what the selection process was, explaining the direction why you went with certain ones, because obviously with 1,048 that you could actually use.
Yes.
It's interesting to hear kind of the thought process related to those. I'll open up for any discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the process. I appreciate all the thought put into it. Lots of different voices, and this will be one of those things I think we could vote on for the rest of the night if we go back and forth, but I don't think we'll do that. So a couple of comments on the names that are before us, and then give me some feedback on how you'd like to handle it moving forward. Malden Skyway Bridge, I like that one, for a lot of the selection comment reasons. The Malden Gateway Bridge, I like that. I do think it's a safe selection. It also has the enunciation of being able to say Gateway to Bridgeway or Gateway to Golden Shrimp. I think that's a nice roll of the tongue. And then the Palmetto Pathway, the same thing. I like the way it rolls off of the tongue. The other two are nice as well. I'm not particularly fond of the Malden Archway, but the HOP would be a neat way to describe it, I think, as you're thinking about moving, you know, walking over for a large venue arena game, if there ever was one over there. That would be a neat thing to describe that as. But that would be kind of my comments, and then some direction on how you'd like to move this forward. Yes.
All right. Ultimately, are you looking for this to get forward to the full council for further discussion? Is that what the city desires?
That's probably the safe bet there, sir.
Okay. So I'll give my little 2 cents, and then that's what we'll end up doing. Some of the things that you mentioned in here in terms of the committee feedback, if I were to look at the final five, I would lean more toward Gateway. Is it safe? Yes. But is it the one that probably describes the best? I believe so as well. You mentioned in here when it talks about sky, most of the bridges that we think of sky are really sky high. This isn't so much. Also, when you're talking about arches, it's technically not an arch bridge. It's a straight cross. I like the idea of hop. I don't like the idea of it being standing for highway overpass. But one of the, one of the many that we got, one was hopper. And I think the idea was more around the idea of the Swamp Rabbit Trail, if it does come through, and that's in fact what we're going to call it when it finally connects. That makes more sense there to hop. And with the Palmetto pathway, it's nice. I would probably venture more down the way of the Gateway. But for anybody who is listening, I will say that I did see the full list, and my daughter's was on there, which was the Kennergy, and it didn't make the finals. But she just saw the Barbie movie, and so she recommended, so I know that your vote did count. It wasn't a vote. Your recommendation was seen. So that's the feedback that I will give. I know that Mr. Matney, he was here previously and then had to leave for his thing. He had some additional thoughts, and there were some from the other list that he wanted to comment on as well. But if you have any further questions for us, otherwise I'm going to ask him to make the motion to go to full council.
Sure. Everything's good. I know. Thank you.
It's a pleasure, council, or committee.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a motion that we forward the naming of the pedestrian bridge to full council for discussion purposes.
I will second that. Any further discussion?
No, Mr. Chairman.
All in favor for passing this on to full council, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. The ayes have it. We'll see you later this month.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. All right, we're now up to the second public comment. Do we have anyone live or in person? Seeing and hearing none, can you concern? What do we want to do on adjournment?
I'll make a motion we adjourn, Mr. Chair.
I will second that. All in favor, say aye. Aye. Do we need discussion?
I was going to let them know just to tie us up.
Yeah. All right, we're going to call this adjourned at 7:16.
You guys can never let Taft take the night off again.
Mr. Reynolds, I appreciated your feedback. I like that. That was good. Y'all both did great on that. That was really good.
So what I took away said was we need to find another thing for hop to stand for.
Historic overpass.
Plain and pale over there.
Or it's just a mystery. Like we did that in secret, you know.
Yeah.
We
I don't know. You tell me what it means.
And we'll put dots on there, so then that way people will constantly argue.
A question mark.
That's right.
Only me will know
when
it really.
That's right.